Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, folks, it's Rick Wilson, and welcome to the Daily Beast's The New Abnormal.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, a left-wing pundit and editor-at-large at the Daily Beast.
I'm also an editor at the Daily Beast, a former Republican political strategist, best-selling author, and full-time troublemaker. We're here to have fun, sharp conversations with some of the smartest people in media, politics, business, and science that help make what's happening in the country and the world clearer.
I'll try to keep Rick to the minimum number of F-bombs and try to keep our kids, pets, and other wildlife sounds from invading our respective bunkers.
Matt Wellstein is the senior writer for The Daily Beast, covering the intersection between politics and pop culture, as well as the host of The Daily Beast, The Last Laugh podcast. Hi, Matt Wellstein.
Hi, Molly. How's it going?
You know, trying not to die. It's good. Can I say that on the podcast? Yes, I can say that on the podcast. We're all trying not to die. Yes.
Everyone's trying not to die every day.
That's right. That's what it's all about. So talk to me about political comedy.
Oof, it's been a year, hasn't it? For everything, but for political comedy, absolutely. I mean, I spend a lot of my time at the Daily Beast watching and writing about and interviewing people who do political comedy, whether it's the late night shows or, you know, really anything. But it's been a pretty crazy year. But I think the one thing that's really like stood out to me above everything else is this like kind of new-ish form of aggressive confrontational political comedy that's come out this year. And, you know, thinking about Borat, obviously, is sort of like the big one, which I know you quite enjoyed the Borat sequel, right?
I love him, and I love that he targeted Michael, well, really Rudy Giuliani, but also Michael Penis.
Yeah, Michael Penis, yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm just a huge Sacha Baron Cohen fan going way back, and I interviewed him on my podcast when he was doing Who is America, which was another show that I loved. And then I'm actually about to have, I just talked to him, but it hasn't aired yet, the director of Borat 2, Jason Walliner, who's just kind of a fascinating guy who's been around in comedy for a long time, but this was his first movie that he directed, which I thought was insane, because think about that as a first film, to take that on and everything that went into it. It took like 2 years, the whole thing, from, you know, start to finish. And obviously the Rudy Giuliani thing was really one of the moments of the year, and he had a lot of moments.
Put down your crumb. She's 15. She's too old for you.
Why are you dressed like this?
She's my daughter. Please, take me instead. Take my anus.
I don't want
no,
you.
No, take my anus. Do not have her.
I'm better than him.
No, I better. My back pussy very tight.
No, please. My front anus.
Please, I will let you enjoy my cum in your mouth. No, I better.
I would love to meet
you. I was in prison many years, so I have techniques with my mouth.
What's going on here? Look at this guy.
I forbid this union. Rudy, Trump will be disappointed. You are leaving hotel without golden shower.
It's funny because this was what started the downward spiral in some way.
Yeah, it kind of foreshadowed it in a way, right?
Yeah, except the downward spiral is what? He's still the president's... I mean, I guess the hair in the can dripping down his face was the lowest moment.
I mean, Four Seasons total landscaping is this.
In my mind, it's a battle between, yeah, Four Seasons, the hair dripping, and obviously, you know, putting his hands down his pants in front of Borat's daughter.
Yeah, that was not great.
Which is not great, yeah. I'm still convinced that there was more going on there than shirt tucking in.
Yeah, I think that's a general consensus at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's that, there's Borat, and then the other one that really stood out to me this year is another person I've had on my podcast is Jordan Klepper, who has been doing this stuff for The Daily Show for years. He was a correspondent on that show, but then kind of left, and now he's come back just periodically doing these segments where he confronts Trump supporters at Trump rallies in a year where no one was doing that kind of thing, mostly because of the pandemic. He was actually going out and putting on a mask and talking to the maskless hordes at these Trump rallies and getting them to say some really insane things. So I think he definitely wins in my book as the sort of bravest, you know, riskiest comedian who actually risked his life for comedy this year.
We are here to celebrate
really as Donald Trump.
Oh, you're 4 years too late.
Huh?
You're 4 years too late.
What? No, no, no. He won this time.
This time?
He won.
It's not the size of the flag that matters. It's how many votes you get in the Electoral College system.
They were here to celebrate the fact that America is a rich, diverse nation with so many different kinds of alleged election fraud.
There's people that's changing votes.
Who?
People across the United States.
Where did you hear this?
All over.
We can't ignore it. We're talking about having dead people vote, number one.
Should Trump have appealed more to the dead person vote?
Should he appeal? We just need fairness.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, as someone who's been to CPAC twice now, the first time I was okay, but the second time I really felt like it's a little scary. I mean, these people are a little scary.
Yeah, I've never been to CPAC. I've been to Politicon a couple times, just like the CPAC's, cool younger brother, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Politicon has more of a mix of, like, normal people.
They're trying, at least.
Yeah, I mean, CPAC is, like, really the dregs.
You know, Matt, I thought what was funny with Jordan was you talk a lot on your podcast to comedians about, like, the ups and downs of their career, their trajectories. You get these stories all the time. And Jordan kind of had this miss with his show, The Opposition, even though I think it had some great moments. But then you see him immediately right after, like, some people saying that that was a loss for him, come back with this just amazing moment in his career.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. It's like I quite like The Opposition as well. And it was mm-hmm. definitely, it was like one of these long, there's been a long string of shows that have tried to follow The Daily Show and failed post Colbert Report. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Jordan Klepper, it's Larry Wilmore, who I also love. But, you know, and just no one seems to really been able to make that time slot work since Colbert left. But yeah, Jordan Klepper, it's like he once he really like figured out his thing and focused on it with these segments, and again, it's like it helps that there's only one, 6-minute segment every 3 months. When you can do that little amount of work and really pack it in, then it really it shows how the quality.
Yeah, and when you interviewed him though, he really shed a light though on like how much the process went into this and how much craftsmanship he went into it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously prepares a ton because with any of these people who are going out and trying to make comedy with real people, they're basically just like creating tons of different scenarios in their head and hoping that they're funny and that it works out. So, you know, I think he would go in with like a million different questions for people, but then he's such a great improviser that he just has to like go with the flow of whatever's happening in that moment. And, you know, if it's taking the piss out of a Trump supporter who's, you know, has some hypocrisy coming out of their mouth because they, you know, believe in one that I just was rewatching was he talks to someone who believes who's pro-life and anti-choice, but thinks that it should be, you know, a choice whether to wear a mask.
Yes, right. Yes.
That's really common in that group. I mean, it's yeah. sort of amazing disconnect.
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought that we'd get a bigger disconnect with those people than, big government versus small government and chasing women around and policing their wombs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind exactly. of amazing.
Matt, the other thing that you were talking when we were beginning this about is that this was a very big year for political comedy and social media.
Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that everyone was stuck at home with nothing to do and sort of production value was prized less maybe than it was in the past, and people would they film themselves in their house. And yeah, I mean, I think obviously the big one in that realm the real big breakout star was Sarah Cooper, which I don't know, when were you guys first aware of Sarah Cooper, or what do you remember about that? Because it was clearly, it's like she was nobody and then she was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely saw her do those videos and they're good.
Felt like one day I didn't know it, and then the next day it was like there was 10,000 videos.
Yeah, and then she got a Netflix special.
How do you keep doing that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question, is how does she pivot from doing lip-syncing Trump is, I think, will be a hard thing for her career, because I don't know if you guys saw the Netflix special, but it was like a lot of Trump, but a lot of kind of experimenting with other stuff too, and I would say some of it worked better than others. But she's already started putting out videos where she's actually speaking in her own voice. Like, she did a great one. She's playing a character which is Jenna Ellis's law mentor.
Oh, that's great.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
So she's kind of like you know, imagining what sort of the people behind the scenes are in this insane MAGA world. But again, like, I guess I don't think MAGA world is going to go anywhere really anytime soon. So I think if she wants to keep working in that realm, she can.
Yeah.
Who else did you see doing interesting things?
I mean, the other breakout star for me, who's I think a lot less well-known than Sarah Cooper at this point, but is also just amazing, is this woman, Blair Erskine, who does these also just ridiculous videos. I think it's even like, it's more difficult than what Sarah Cooper was doing because she's actually creating original stuff and creating original characters where she's spoofing, again, MAGA people like anti-maskers. And she did, I think one of my favorites was she was playing Tiffany Trump's best friend in one, which I thought was pretty funny.
Tiffany's like my best friend. We met like 3 months ago at this club I used to work at in Jacksonville. And over the weekend, she was like, hey, do you want to come to my dad's house? We're having, what does she call it? We're having a coup. And I was like, sure, you know? Because I grew up poor. I've never been to like a rich person party. And I was like, I'd love to go to a coup. But we've been here for like 5 days and the coup has not happened yet. And like the stuff that has happened is like pretty, I don't know, like not okay.
Oh, yeah, that one was so good.
She came out of nowhere. She's like, you know, I was looking at her IMDb just to be like, I wonder if she's done anything else. And like, no, she's done, you know, some short films or some random things. And I think maybe she's been in a commercial or something, but she's really just someone who was at home during this time, started making videos on her phone and totally blew up. And is yeah. Now when she posts them, it's like they're highly anticipated, get shared all over Twitter. I know everyone at the Daily Beast gets excited and watches them the second she posts them. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too because you're seeing, especially I became like addicted to political TikTok this year, and never did I think that I was going to be in awe of 18-year-old's political humor.
Yeah, what was something from an 18-year-old on TikTok that got you?
And if you say George's daughter.
Oh.
Out of respect to common new abnormal guest George
yes.
Conway, I will not say Claudia
but, you
Conway.
Know, she is quite, she's quite beautiful. I mean, I think, and I found her funny, but I'm not a TikTok connoisseur, so I don't know.
Was she trying to be funny? I'm not even sure.
She's done some pretty funny ones.
She's
actually,
pretty funny.
One of the best ones to answer the question was she did a TikTok of her mom coughing when she got COVID.
That was so fucking bad, but hilarious.
Like, it was like some of the best gallows humor of the year.
Oh, my God.
I mean, she is kind of hilarious, but yes, it's true.
I know. Where is she going to go next? I think she could have a big future, Claudia Conway.
Yeah, I could see her ultimately ending up being famous, but again, for what? Who knows? You know, it's good to have something you're famous for.
Yeah, instead of just who you are.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Let's face it. After a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics.
ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking.
Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut.
It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day.
ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow.
So, I first gave ZBiotics a try when I was having an existential crisis at a Dave & Buster's. I drank it before my first Dangerous Waters punch, and you wouldn't believe how on top of my game, no pun intended, I felt the very next morning.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. There's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now.
Go to zbiotics.com/abnormal to get 15% off your first order when you use abnormal at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember to head to zbiotics.com/abnormal and use the code abnormal at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
So another thing we were going to talk about is the biggest staple of comedy of the last half a century, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, it's been also a very weird year for Saturday Night Live, which is something that I am just weirdly obsessed with, as anyone who knows me knows, and for no good reason. Like I think most of it's pretty bad, to be honest with you, and I watch every minute of it every week.
We're very glad that you're on that page, because Molly and I were discussing this beforehand that we were both like, Saturday Live's a little rough.
Well, hey, you talked to Alec Baldwin, so.
I mean, can you explain, has it always been bad?
Well, the thing that everyone talks about, this is like Lorne Michaels' thing, is that everyone thinks that when they were in high school, it was the best that it ever was.
Yes.
But that
right.
has more to do
oh,
with
that's smart.
That has more to do with their sensibility when they were in high school,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Just like people's favorite records. It's always the record that you've really felt at 19 years old.
Yeah. And that's like, it's totally true. It's like, for me, I'm like, yeah, when it was Mike Myers and Dana Carvey and Chris Farley, it was the best. Like, that's just when it was the best.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that true, or is that someone else might have a very different perspective on that?
It's funny because it's like there's clearly, occasionally they hit it out of the park, and those clips become huge viral sensations.
Yeah, I mean, what I say to everyone who's like, should I be watching SNL? I'm like, no, you should be watching whatever the one clip the next day is that we often post on the Daily Beast is what was worth watching. And otherwise, no, sitting through the whole thing is definitely not necessary. But, you know, their political stuff, I think, always gets attention because it becomes a thing no matter what it is. And, you know, I think it's Tina Fey as Sarah Palin is obviously one that stands out. And I think that was like an example of something that was funny, but it was more because Sarah Palin was so funny than anything Tina Fey was doing. It was, she was just verbatim repeating the, you know, ridiculous things that came out of Sarah Palin's mouth.
But 30 Rock is really funny.
Yeah. And but that's, you know, she was writing it and she was like,
yeah, but that was born of SNL.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of the SNL behind the scenes in her, you know, exaggerated way.
And I think that's also one of the things of what SNL stays relevant through is that the things SNL spurs are truly, truly some of the most amazing stuff we've ever had in comedy, whether it's the really popular stuff on to just the obscure stuff. Like, you had Robert Smigel on, and TV Funhouse is my favorite thing ever. And I think Triumph did some of the best political comedy of the past few years as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He definitely has.
Yeah, he's great.
It definitely is a thing that they do come up with some brilliant stuff, which is why it's still known as such a big thing. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and I think the other thing, I mean, this kind of goes into the Tina Fey thing, because when she was playing Sarah Palin, she had already left the show, so she was kind of one of these earlier celebrity, you know, guests coming in. And so, and then with Alec Baldwin playing Trump, he basically became a member of the cast over the last 4 years, which is something he probably never thought he would do. And then they've just kind of kept trying it again and again, like, you know, Ben Stiller, who we talked to back in the day, was Michael Cohen, and that was really funny. And like Robert De Niro was Robert Mueller. And then I think they jumped the shark a little bit this year when they brought in Jim Carrey as Joe Biden, which to me just really didn't work at all. As great as Jim Carrey is, I just didn't see it in his impression that it was really.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Like it wasn't funny. It didn't capture what was funny about Joe Biden, if there is something funny about him, which I don't know.
Well, unlike President Trump, we do accept the results of this election.
We're not mad at them. We have to act graciously in victory, though. We need to go forward together. Unfortunately, there are situations in life, and this is one of them, where there must be a winner and
loser.
Are they keeping him on?
So no, this past week they officially replaced him. First, Jim Carrey did this like very kind of tweet that got a lot of attention that I thought was like strangely sincere, where he was like, "I'm stepping aside as Joe Biden, like I've done my service, and now's the time for me to leave." So luckily, I think he saw the writing on the wall and also didn't want to be Alec Baldwin for the next 4 years going to SNL all the time. Like I think he has better things to do.
Yeah, but Alec Baldwin as Trump is really good.
Yeah, he is good, and he's
more Trump than Trump at this point.
Yeah, I think, and it was a larger than life impression, which is what you need sometimes, and especially with someone like Trump. You know, I think having a big celebrity, you know, made sense in that way. With Joe Biden, I think they tried it with Jim Carrey and it didn't work, but then now they have one of their actual cast members, Alex Moffat, who you might know, Molly, as the SNL's Eric Trump, who's quite funny.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you've seen those the thing they do with Don Jr. and Eric. I think is actually very funny, and they often do it on Weekend Update.
Yeah.
Where they'll come on, and Alex Moffat plays Eric as this, like, as you know, the dumbest Trump son, and is basically just looking over to Don Jr. and mimicking all of his movements. If you watch him, and just like, anyway, it's very funny. But he premiered his Biden, and it's not like it was the funniest thing ever, but it was like a pretty accurate impression, and I think it's great that they have someone from the cast doing it and there to do it, because they haven't had that, you know, for the last 4 years in these big roles, and they already have Maya Rudolph in as Kamala, and she's great, but also someone who's, you know, not from the cast. So one, she can't be there all the time, and two, it does kind of take away the, you know, opportunities from these people who are, you know, supposedly the main cast members on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but the goal here is to make the show really funny, and well, it is. I mean, being on SNL is a huge opportunity, and if you don't get, you know, out there, I don't know. I don't have so much, but I guess that's a point.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and they've had some really good cast members on this season too, doing political stuff, like, you know, Kate McKinnon, who does everything amazingly. But she really took off as Rudy this year because she had a lot to do as Rudy. And then, you know, they've had some other great people, like Cecily Strong plays a lot.
She's
great. She did Melania, who I feel like she hasn't done Melania in ever in a really long time. But I feel like she got one-upped by Laura Benanti, who does Melania on Colbert's show and is unbelievable, and it's like I kind of think she's done it to a degree that no one else can quite get there.
It's so funny because Melania herself is so, you know, is basically just a parody.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that they're all parodies.
Yeah,
you know, you could say that about any of these people.
I mean, and I think, like, if we do talk about what are good moments of SNL past our teenage years, the Sean Spicer imitation was like that was one of Saturday Night Live's best moments of all time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Melissa McCarthy. Yeah, and that was like that also kicked off the women playing men in Trump world, which apparently he really did not like. That was the story that came out around then, was that
was great.
He didn't like that women were playing his people. And so then I remember there were a lot of talk about, like, maybe they should start having a woman play Trump for that reason.
Yeah, no, that was really great.
But is there not a thing too that, like, there's part of me that thinks Biden is a little hard to character because it's all in the speech. Like, it's hard to do him.
Yeah, and I think this has got a lot of conversation around this during the Obama years too, was that they had a lot of trouble making Obama funny. And like, famously, Key and Peele with the anger translator were the only ones to really find a good angle on Obama. But yeah, Biden is not I think it's tough. It's gonna be hard.
You could, if you sort of were committed to it. The problem with Trump is so awful that you really do hate him, which adds an element, you know, no one is ever gonna say, like, you know, don't be too mean. You know, it's harder when you're the guy who's, like, kind of saved democracy for now.
I also think there's, like, that thing where they may have been a little careful leading up to the election because of the stakes.
Right,
and that
for sure.
once Biden is president, and now, I mean, there's a little bit more freedom to be harsh because, you know, He already beat Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, now that you say that, it's funny because, like, I think the only good Joe Biden impression I heard was when episode one did that episode where it was three Joe Bidens talking to each other. And they don't care if he gets elected.
Yeah. You're allowed to be funnier in that sense. Yeah. I mean, I remember also with Will Ferrell's George W. Bush, there was like all this talk about how he made Bush more likable, even though he was playing him very dumb. He made him likable to a degree that people were willing to vote for him, and that there's like this theory out there that he actually, because he seemed more fun than Al Gore, both in real life and mostly on SNL, that actually influenced the election, which I don't know if I believe that, but it's possible.
It's a theory.
Yeah, certainly a theory.
Anyone who works for SNL likes to say that, you know, oh, no, we don't have, they don't want to be responsible for elections, for deciding elections.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, like having Trump dance the Hotline Bling.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other thing. When they had Trump hosts, that's the original sin of political comedy at this point. Yeah.
Thank you so much, you know, for coming on. This was really great.
Thank you, guys. Stay safe. Happy holidays.
On that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The New Abnormal from The Daily Beast. In future episodes, we'll be talking with smart folks from The Daily Beast and beyond, from media, culture, politics, and science, who will help us understand what's happening to our country and the world.
We hope you'll subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app and share the show on social media. We're just getting started and don't want you to miss an episode. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm Molly Jongfest, and he's the Rick Wilson. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again on the next episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.